Chapter 19. I went to my lab and started cleaning off my summoning circle. I'd knocked a few things onto it in the course of sweeping up anything incriminating. The FBI, or Rudolph, had added a bit to the mess. I pushed everything away from the circle and then swept it thoroughly with a broom. When you use a circle as a part of ritual magic, its integrity is paramount. Any object that falls across it or breaks its plane would collapse the circle's energy. Dust and other small particles wouldn't collapse a circle, but they did degrade its efficiency. After I was done sweeping, I got a new shop cloth and a bottle of cleaning alcohol and wiped it down as thoroughly as if I were planning to perform surgery upon it. It took me about 20 minutes. Once that was done, I opened an old cigar box on one shelf that was full of river rocks. All but one of them were decoys, camouflage. I pawed through it until I found the smooth piece of fire-rounded obsidian and took it out of the box. I went to the circle and sat in it, folding my legs in front of me. I touched the circle with a mild effort of will, and it snapped to life in a sudden curtain of gossamer energy. The circle would help contain and shape the magic I was about to work. I put the black stone down on the floor in front of me, took a deep breath, straightened my back, and then began to draw in my will. I remained like that, relaxed, breathing deeply and slowly as I formed the spell in my head. This one was a fairly delicate working and probably would have been beyond my skill before I had begun teaching Molly how to control her own power. Now, though, it was merely annoyingly difficult. Once the energy was formed in my mind, I took a deep breath and whispered, "Voce, vocho, vocius." I waited a few seconds and then repeated myself, "Voce, vocho, vocius." That went on for a couple of minutes while I sat there doing my impression of a Roman telephone. I was just starting to wonder whether or not the damned rock was going to work when the lab around me vanished, replaced by an inky darkness. The circle's energy field became visible, a pale blue light in the shape of a cylinder, stretching from the floor up into the infinite overhead space. Its light did not make my surroundings visible, as if the glow from the circle simply had nothing to reflect from. I said, and my voice echoed strangely. "Hello?" "Hold on to your horses," said a grumpy, distant voice. "I'm coming." A moment later, there was a flash of light, and a cylinder like my own appeared directly in front of me. Ebenezer sat in it, legs folded the same way mine were. A black stone that was a twin to my own sat in front of him. Ebenezer looked tired. His hair was mussed, his eyes sunken. He was wearing only a pair of pajama bottoms, and I was surprised at how much muscle tone he had kept, despite his age. Of course, he'd spent the last few centuries mostly working on his farm. That would put muscle on anyone. "Hoss," he said by way of greeting. "Where are you?"
"My place," I said.
"Situation?"
"My wards are down, I've got backup, but I don't want to stay here for long. The police and FBI have gotten involved, and the Reds have swung at me twice in the past 2 days.
Where are you?"
Ebenezer grunted.
"Best if I don't say. The Merlin is preparing his counterstrike, and we're trying to find out how much they already know about it."
"When you say we, I assume you mean the Gray Council."
The Gray Council was the appellation that had stuck to our little rogue organization inside the White Council itself. It consisted of people who could see lightning, hear thunder, and admit to themselves that wizards everywhere were increasingly in danger of being exterminated or enslaved by other interests, such as the vampire courts or the Black Council. The Black Council was mostly a hypothetical organization. It consisted of a lot of mysterious figures in black robes with delusions of ringwraithhood. They liked to call up the deadly, dangerous demons from outside of reality, the outsiders, and to infiltrate and corrupt every supernatural nation they could get to. Their motivations were mysterious, but they've been causing trouble for the Council and everyone else for quite a while. I had encountered members of their team, but I had no hard proof of their existence, and neither did anyone else. Cautionary rumors of their presence had been met with derision and accusations of paranoia by most of the White Council until last year, when a Black Council agent had killed more than 60 wizards and infiltrated the Edinburgh facility so thoroughly that more than 95% of the staff and security team had gotten their brains redecorated to one degree or another. Even the senior council members had been influenced. The traitor had been stopped, if just barely, and at a heavy cost. After that, the council as a whole believed that there might be a faceless, nameless organization running amok in the world, and that any number of them could actually be members of the White Council itself, operating in disguise. Paranoia and mistrust. They had been steadily growing within the White Council, whose leader, the Merlin, still refused to admit that the Black Council was real, for fear that our own people would start going over to the bad guys out of fear or ambition. His decision had actually had the opposite effect on the frightened, nervous wizards of the White Council. Instead of throwing the clear light of truth on the situation, the Merlin had made it that much more murky and shadowy, made it easier for fear to prey upon his fellow wizards' thoughts.